Welcome to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, brought to you by Visit Anderson, South Carolina, home of beautiful Lake Hartwell. The Rapala family of fishing products, including VMC hooks and 13 fishing rods, reels, and more. And the Bass Angler Sportsman Society. Now, here's your host, lifetime BASS member, Tom Abraham.
Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. I am Tom Abraham, your guide for the next hour as we feature the Bassmaster Elite Series and those looking to get into that exclusive group through the St. Croix Bassmaster Open Series and the up-and-comers on the Strike King Bassmaster College Series and the tens of thousands of Bass Nation anglers around the country competing on the local level, all with a chance to advance to the big leagues of professional fishing. Now, the Bass Nation operates youth, high school, and college programs, including a Junior Bassmaster Championship, High School National Championship, College National Championship, and the College Bracket event, leading to a Bassmaster Classic berth. The Bass Nation is at the grassroots of who we are, and for more information about how to become a member or to start a Bass Nation club, visit Bassmaster.com and click on the Nation tab. Now, the best way to communicate with the show is to visit our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/bass or on Twitter at Bassmaster and use the hashtag Bass Radio. You can also listen to all the shows at Bassmaster.com/radio or just hit the Nation tab at Bassmaster.com and click on Bassmaster Radio. Our first cast segment of the show is brought to you by 13 Fishing, and we have a great deal for you right now. The Gerald Swindle Design Meta Series Rods and Inception G2 Reels are available at 13fishing.com along with all their other great products. And for a limited time, you can get 20% off your entire order by using the discount code BASSRADIO20. That's BASSRADIO20 only at 13fishing.com. Now, I fish these rods and reels myself and could not be happier. Get 20% off with the code BASSRADIO20. The Dakota Lithium Bassmaster Elite at Lake Champlain is in the books. And now the elites are on the final stop of the season at the Minn Kota Bassmaster Elite at the Thousand Islands out of Clayton, New York, which is really more near the mouth of Lake Ontario, and we'll have a complete report on that next week, including our top three finishers. In the meantime, though, through the miracle of technology, we can bring you the top three, well, or at least second and third from last week, since the winner, Caio Fujita, is not quite ready for long-form radio with his English. So Ronnie Moore will tell us how he won and also look at the point situation for the final event on the St. Lawrence. He's coming up a little bit later on. Finishing second was Justin Atkins, and he's coming up in a few minutes. But we're going to get things started here with the third-place finisher, Cody Huff, out of Missouri, and he's with us on the VMC hook right now. Cody, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
It's nice when you have a good week to, take a little pressure off, and it's always fun to have a good turn.
Talk to us a little bit about your smallmouth chops, because you're a guy out of Missouri, Ava, Missouri, obviously, and it's kind of a mixed bag there. But just talk about fishing these smallmouth waters and how you have figured that all out.
Yeah, I really don't have a lot of experience chasing these smallmouths around, but I do have a lot of experience, using my electronics and using live scope and just, being able to fish deep. And if I can see them on there, I can usually kind of feel out what kind of mood they're in. And that's the fun thing about chasing these smallmouths is a lot of times, it's big forward-facing sonar fest, and you can kind of get to see a lot of fish, throw out a lot of fish, and kind of gives you time to really figure out what kind of mood they're in.
You were using that half ounce VMC SLJ sleek jig and tipped it with the Strike King 3X Baby Z2 as well. This was a common theme. Most of the guys using similar type of stuff. Just talk about that jig though, and talk about that Baby Z and how that worked for you and the technique that you were using.
Yeah, so I was basically just Damiki rigging, it's a technique that's just blew up here in the last, year or two, and something I've been doing for a long time. And, I was varying my approach from anywhere from an eighth ounce jig head, sleek heads, all the way up to, a half or three quarter. But it just kind of depended how deep the fish were in the water trough and all that. But I threw a half to a 3/8 a lot of the time, and if they were real shallow, I'd go a little bit lighter. But I was throwing that Z2 on there. It was just it's one of those baits. It's a good shad imitator, you know. And I was actually throwing the big one. Most guys were throwing the baby Z2, and I was throwing the 5-incher.
And when you went to the 5-inch one, you would go to a lighter jig head. So basically, you know, trying to keep the overall weight of the presentation about the same?
No, I threw a 5-incher on all of them except the 8th ounce.
Okay.
The 8th ounce I put on a 2-incher, and then all the rest of them I pretty much had a 5-incher on, and I was just kind of using the same bait no matter and just adjusting the fall by changing.
Now, is there any method to the madness? It looked like sometimes with your braid and your setup, your spinning outfit setup, you would have the green braid. Other times you had the yellow braid. What's the story with that? Is that just so that you could tell the difference yourself in the rigs, or is it just the way it worked out with the line that you had on?
Yeah, it wasn't nothing special. It was just one of those deals. It's the line that I had on, and it was all just fine. I wish it was something cool like that. Oh, they can see the green better on a cloudy day and the sunny day. It isn't nothing like that. That's just what I had, and I'm just going fishing.
It's been an interesting season for you, Cody Huff, with us here. And, you know, when you look at the way this season has gone, you had one I guess you had a couple of tournaments that would be, you know, considered pretty rough, the Santee Cooper and the Sabine River. But you had a lot of finishes as well where you were making the cuts. You started out the season making, I think, 3 or 4 straight cuts and, you know, getting to day 3. And then things went south for you a little bit. And then you come back with this good finish here after the 20th place finish at St. Clair. So it leaves you in a position where you really have to be decent, not great, but decent this week to make sure that you lock yourself into the Classic, right?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I had the chance to have a really good season. It's all about just, you know, managing those bombs, not having bombs, you know. Say, you know, I do something a little bit different and end up with a couple 50th or 60th place finishes, you know, I skyrocket up the points list. So, you know, I had, like you said, I had 2 really bad finishes and, you know, just absolute bombs. And that's just, it's crazy how that'll affect your season as far as points go. So I'm just, I'm very happy to be battling back and being right there and having a good shot at being able to.
And I would imagine that, I mean, the strategy involved in that, like, you know, you're bombing, you know that it's the middle of the day and there's nothing in the live well. And, you know, I would imagine that that's part of the method of the madness is like when things are not going well, you've got to figure out a way to finish 50th, right? And just save points and figure out how can I get something in them. You probably were doing it. I wouldn't imagine you were going for broke like it was a classic.
Yeah, I'm really bad about that. I'm one of those guys that I just, if I've got something that I really, if I feel like I'm doing the right thing, I'm with it. You know, sometimes that's great and sometimes it's not. You know, it's just one of those deals. It's kind of, that's the kind of stuff that's going to bite you in the tail every now and again. But I'd say that's also the kind of stuff that's going to help you win whenever that comes up.
Yeah, Cody Huff with us. You can tell he's battling some wind and some waves as we talk, as he is on the water at the St. Lawrence. And we're talking about last week's event, of course, at Champlain. Now, I don't have to tell you, but maybe I should tell the listeners. Last time you were at Grand Lake was at the BassPro.com Bassmaster Open in 2021, and you finished 8th out of 225 anglers. I would imagine you would love this opportunity to get back there with 53 guys and see what kind of damage that you could do at Grand Lake.
Yeah, I really would. And I mean, it's not because I have a ton of experience on that lake, but in the same breath, it's only 2.5 hours from my house. You know what I mean? It's not a lake that I fish very often or have even fished very many tournaments on. I've really only just fished a couple tournaments there my whole life. But it's just very, very similar to what I'm used to, you know, and I would feel very, very comfortable out there. Just, you hate to miss one so close to home.
Yeah, exactly. Cody, he won the 2019 Bassmaster College Classic bracket, and then in 2021 did a tremendous job. It was the Angler of the Year, the Central Open's Angler of the Year as well, was a Bethel fisherman, did tremendous there as well. And when you hear Ava, Missouri, we always think of Rick Klun, and Klun has been kind of a mentor of yours. Do you continue that conversation now? I mean, now that you're doing much better on the Elite Tour. tour, do you still continue to pick the brain of the great Rick Klun?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he is one of the most knowledgeable people that I've ever known, and there will never be a day that I'm not always trying to learn something from him.
Yeah, it is amazing, you know, the way he has. And talk to me, when you have a conversation, I'd love to be a fly on a wall with Rick Klun when you're talking about the electronics, because you're fishing away. He has had to train himself late in his career how to deal with all this forward-facing sonar and everything else, and you're one of these young guns that are very comfortable with it. Just, I'd love to – does he pick your brain about forward-facing sonar?
Yeah, he really does. He's very intrigued by it, and he's always – he's one of those guys that always wants to learn as well. So if it's something like that that he's not all that comfortable with, he's not afraid to ask him questions. He likes to get in the boat and go see it.
Yeah, yeah. I would think, you know, Rick Klun, he'd like to have a spinnerbait in his hand with about, you know, 22-pound, mono, not fluoro, mono. Yeah. He'd want to have the big mono and the spinnerbait and firing that thing at the shore, you know, and it would cover and stuff like that, which I say that with a smile on my face because that's the way I like to fish too, but that's a different world. All right, Cody Huff has been our guest. Cody, we know you're out there now doing your thing at the St. Lawrence, but we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully it all works out, and we'll see you in this upcoming Bassmaster Classic.
All right. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Cody Huff, and battling some wind, battling some waves, but joining us there and taking a few minutes, and we really appreciate him taking the time to do that. He's a good, good young angler. Another good young angler is Justin Atkins. He needed a good tournament. He got a good tournament. It was 1 ounce that separated second from third, and Justin Atkins had second, and he will join us next right here on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And now an opportunity to talk to the guy that finished second. He was second. The difference between second and third was 1 ounce. And he finished second there at Lake Champlain at the Dakota Lithium Bassmaster Elite. It's a great tournament for Justin Atkins as he's charging up the AOI list and can do some damage this week at the St. Lawrence River. Who knows, you know, where it ends up for him. But he joins us now in the VMC Hook. Justin, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you joining us here. And, you know, so close. This is the second time you finished second in an elite. Just take us through your mindset in this deal. Fujita was really on him, and it seemed like he was catching the same size fish, you know, all the way through. And with the margins were so small here. Did you feel like you had a shot of running him down, or did he almost have to give it back to you, you know, if you were going to get the win?
No, I felt like I did have a good opportunity to run him down. I was cycling through that same area as well during the tournament. And, you know, on those first 2 days, there was a lot of fish there. Well, by day three, I was seeing a lot less. And I was really relying harder on another area that seemed to still be really producing that I had more to myself. And so I just felt like on day four, there was a possibility that, you know, he could only catch 18. You know, possibly 19. If I catch 22, I'm going to run him down. And when we got started that fourth day, it was real slick to begin with, and I caught 18 pounds really fast and had two really, you know, big ones in the bag. And I thought, and then the wind really got to blowing, and it started blowing out of a different direction. And I thought then I had a really good opportunity to maybe run him down because I started to notice he was moving a lot more than he had been all week, and that's just always a sign that guys are really trying hard to, you know, put something together. And I thought that if I could just get it on up there a little bit higher, I'd have a chance. But without calling those, I had 2, 3, and 3/4 in my bag the last day. Without calling those, I didn't feel good about it by weigh-in time. But all day, I felt like there was a good possibility.
So let's talk some forward-facing sonar, because for us older guys, it's a little bit mind-boggling, to be quite honest with you. And I remember it was that way, you know, when we were first breaking in the first round of electronics and going all the way back to flashers and so on, and people thought that you know, we were getting an unfair advantage doing that. But my question with the forward-facing is, when you got these massive bodies of water, where are you starting? I mean, how are you deciding? Because it just seems like you're randomly in the middle of nowhere and you're fishing for onesies and you're seeing a big dot there and there's one, or here's a school of them over here. But you can't possibly just drop the trolling motor and just start searching with your forward-facing sonar. So how do you narrow down an area to where, okay, this is a spot? Is it something you see on your down sonar or whatever, your mapping? What is it that puts you in a position then where then you will drop the trolling motor and start looking with the sonar, with the forward-facing sonar?
So really, with practice, I just start fishing how I feel like current conditions are setting up. I'm going to fish different depths, look and see what the lake has to offer. When I start getting some bites or start seeing some fish, I'll start building onto that. So I am the first morning of practice. I was fishing around, saw some grass on my side skin. It was out about 20, and I got on the edge of it and then started using my forward facing sonar and saw some fish around it and was just randomly fishing and caught a few. And I realized then that that was a possibility, you know, that the later in the year, the grass had grown out deeper and gotten a lot taller. It was making a good hard fall, but that was going to be a possibility. Another deal that a lot of guys did, like Cody Huff, was catching those fish out deep. And really, they were just relating to bait. And, I mean, we did this before we had forward-facing sonar. It was just a lot easier. I mean, it's just a lot easier now with it. But, I mean, this fish is just getting drained. And so what happens is that bait's going to suspend out there over a certain depth, whether it be 20, 30 foot, whatever. And it's out there roaming around. Well, this fish will be down below them, we'll say, in 30. Well, the bottom's 20, 30 foot deep and falls off. It gives this fish a break. A hide from them, you know, something to run, something to relate to, and then come up. And so I just look for things like that. Like, I know the fish are going to be on bait. I'm looking for some kind of drain, something those fish can use. It may be 60 foot on the bottom and then come up to 30, but that just gives them a valley to get down there in that they feel like they're hiding from the fish in. And then another thing that's, you know, Champlain, like up on that upper end of Inland Sea, it's really flat out there, and the guys were catching them out there just using their forward facing sonar, but places like that are generated by current. Mm-hmm. You know, you have wind blowing and you have a bottleneck and it opens up, that current's still flowing out in there. And that's just going to always gravitate fish. So there's a lot of things that go into it. But basically, I just use forward facing sonar to speed up my practicing process. You know what I mean? It's not a deal of I just get out there and just start looking. I think people have that misconception.
Yeah.
You know, all we do is just put the trolling motor in, and we just troll around, and then we see them, and we just catch them. And that's not it. We have years of experience catching them before we even had that. Now it's just a tool of I know they're going to be on A, B, or C type of conditions, you know, and I'm going to use that tool to try to see if they're there faster. It just speeds everything up. It allows me to cover a lot more water, see the fish. When I'm starting to see them, I can rotate through bait, see what they react to better. But, like, come tournament time, I caught a good many of my fish. I was always watching my sonar, but I would just make long casts out in front of the boat, and my sonar allowed me to stay right on the edge of the grass, and then I would just make long casts, and I caught a good many of them I never saw.
Yeah.
You know, and would I have figured that deal out without it? Possibly. Would I have missed it? Possibly. You know, but I've caught 1,000 fish out of drains and in grass edges and rock piles and all that, and without ever seeing them.
So that's a great description of this, and so you are using a lot of the traditional, you know, ways to find the fish, and then using this to kind of narrow it down and lock in on it. But you got to start with something that is something that's fairly traditional, whether it's the end of a long point or whether you see bait balls on a sonar, whatever, and then this allows you to hone in. All right, so that's a good explanation of it. Justin Atkins with us here. Talk about your drop shot setup and the way I kind of like the way you hook your worm on a drop shot. You're using it seems like it's not exactly nose hooked, but it's kind of nose hooked. It's a little bit different look, I think, than some of the other guys do. Just talk about the ways that you like to set up your drop shot.
So I like to throw a Fusion 19 drop shot hooked by Berkeley. And what I like to do, I throw a flat worm all the time on smallmouth fishing. It's the greatest smallmouth fishing bait ever. It imitates bait fish. It imitates gobies, crawfish, all kind of things. I will take that hook and go the length of the point back into the worm and thread it up through, and then I take the tip of the worm and put it back over the point of the hook.
Yeah.
What that does is it requires your worm to stay straight. And so when you cast it out there and it's falling real fast, if it's just threaded through there and the tip and the end of the worm is not held by the point of the hook, that worm wants to twirl. and it just twists your line up constantly every time it goes down. Causes you to get a lot of line twists throughout the day because you have to change line every night. But if you will take the point of that hook and stick the end of the worm back on it to where it requires it to stay straight, your worm just falls straight. It falls quicker, so you can get away with using less weight and just keep from having a lot of line twists.
Yeah, I like that. It's good setup there, and people can see that at Bassmaster.com. A great picture of it as to how you set it up. Now, the other thing you did was you used an underspin. Others were not using it. I'm a big underspin fan. I mean, I can't throw a swim bait, it seems like, without an underspin. But you were using it kind of a moping technique, but with an underspin. Talk about your decision to do that and how that might have helped you out.
Yeah, so for the last probably 2 years, I've started throwing an underspin. I've always thrown underspins with big swim baits and stuff at Pickwick. But in the last couple of years, I've started dialing down baits, throwing stuff that's more subtle and just throwing a blade on it. I've had a lot of success with it. And so when we got there this week, I had caught a few at St. Clair doing it. Not obviously not great. I lost a few on it. Probably could have dialed that deal in a little better there and made it work, but I had a bunch of them in my boat from taking them there. When we got to Champlain and I saw that they were really hard on bait, you know, when I got around fish, I was seeing a lot of bait balls. Anytime you're doing that, a little flash doesn't hurt anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out trying to catch them on a swim bait. And I could catch a few, but I had a lot of fish that wouldn't commit to the bait. They would come up on it and veer off. And so I felt like they were a little bit pressure shy. Champlain is an awesome fishery, but when you have an awesome fishery, it normally gets a lot of fishing pressure. And so I felt like those fish wanted something a little more subtle. So I decided to throw the flash by using an underspin, and then I just put a flat worm on it. So a flat worm, a lot of different baits that have that tail where it comes out of the body and necks down and then just kind of bulbs on the end. Anytime you just reel that, it has a quiver. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. not like it just comes through the water doing nothing. It has a real tight quiver. And so that's always a good way, you know, something good to add to a reeling bait.
Right.
And so I just put the flat worm on the underspin, and it didn't take very long. I started getting a lot of bites, and they were big ones. And so I knew immediately it was going to be a deal.
Yeah. Justin Atkins has been our guest pro out of West Alabama, Pickwick guy, and a guy that did very well at Champlain. And Justin, we wish you the best of luck here, and let's see what happens here by the time it's all said and done. Top three come out every week. Maybe we'll talk again next week after the St. Lawrence River. That would be great for you.
Yes, absolutely. That'd be awesome.
Hi, Matt. Thank you. It's Justin Atkins. All right, when we come back, the Rapala Winner's Circle, and we're going to do it with Ronnie Moore, because Caio Fujita's English just isn't quite up to stuff yet. We'll do that next, right here on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And it's time for, well, this segment of the show is brought to you by Rapala because it's the Rapala Winner's Circle. But I don't have Caio Fujita in the Rapala Winner's Circle because his English just is not up to snuff yet. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just not 100% there yet. Kid is an amazing fisherman, just doing a tremendous job on the Elite Series. He got the win, 86 pounds, 12 ounces, got the win in a tournament that was like restrictor plate racing in NASCAR, where every fish seemed to be the same weight, and whoever caught one that was 4 ounces more than everybody else was going to win this tournament, and Fujita won it. But coming up now, we got the St. Lawrence River. It's the final tournament of the year. It's the with the elites. You have got a lot on the line. The winner automatically qualifies for the Bassmaster Classic. You have got the Angler of the Year on the line. You got Rookie of the Year on the line. You got Cut Line on the line. Classic Line on all kinds of stuff. So who better to talk to than Ronnie Moore and his calculator? And he sits in for Caio Fujita in our Rapala Winner Circle. So Ronnie, did you ever think that you would be in a Rapala Winner's Circle? I know you had some success fishing the college circuit, but now you're in the Winner's Circle.
Well, I always had those aspirations, Tom, but you know, I didn't know you back when I was having success, so we'll just have to settle for it now. But I'll have to admit, I live in Arkansas and I'm from North Carolina. My English is pretty broken as well, so we'll try to get through it.
Not as much as Fujita. Now, you did some stuff earlier in the week with Fujita, you know, talking about his win and so on, and you were able to kind of get through that. This is a fascinating kid. I don't know. You know, he might speak perfect English, but doesn't want to share that he speaks perfect English, because then he'd have to tell us more about, you know, what lures he's using and what secret sauce he's got on it.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously I posted about his win. I try to make a post every single final day of whoever wins the event to give them their kudos and kind of put a bow on social media in terms of their win, just from my perspective of it. And the hoops that these international anglers have to jump through just to be able to become an Elite Series pro, not only do that and then go on to win and be an Elite Series champion, kudos to them.
Yeah.
Long time away from their families, different cultures, lonely nights, figuring out trucks, credit, financial and stuff. There's so many different things. And then you have the language barrier. I think that when you hit success as early as Kyoya has in Japan, 4 angler of the year, 6 victories in just a few years of tournament fishing there, then coming to America where everyone now puts a microphone in your face, you don't know where some of this stuff is going. You're not sure what you should say, how to say it. I don't blame the guy for being more secretive or more reserved until he knows who he can trust.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would cling to the first people I found in a foreign country and trust them for every interaction. Shoot, there's people I know for 20 years of my life that I don't trust on certain things. So I don't blame him at all, but what a special talent Kyoya Fujita is. And he could be... it's the makings of possibly the best Japanese angler ever for the Elite Series very, very soon. Who knows? I mean, he's on that trajectory now.
Yeah, he's on that trajectory. But the guy, you know, next week at the St. Lawrence, Taku Ito, I mean, he's a guy that showed that he can catch those smallmouth like his boat. He is loaded with personality. His English is getting better and better. I've actually had him on the radio, and, you know, it could happen. We could go back-to-back. You know, we thought that by now we would have gone back-to-back with Canadian anglers. We literally could go back-to-back with, you know, with Japanese anglers. Could happen.
It's fantastic. And to see the success that Taku has had, how kind of reserved he was. I remember putting closed captions on his Tackle Tip Tuesday for his winning effort when he found smallmouth Disneyland at the St. Lawrence River in 2021. His closed captioning was on there. He had some rough moments as well. I had to figure out certain baits and techniques. I did the same thing for Kyoya Fujita's Tackle Tip that aired Tuesday after his win. But you got to think about it. Kenta Kimura, fantastic talent. Yeah. He's been in America a long time. He's second in the Open's EQ points race. He doesn't need to be, but when he's in America, he's fishing tournaments, 9 elites, 9 opens. Kenta is a fishing machine. We have, you know, Takahiro in past years.
Yeah.
You have Nario Tanabe, all these different people, Ben Matsubu over the years. There's so many great anglers that have came from Japan. And now that there's a lot more technology for the younger generation that's coming from Japan, I'm very interested to see how the next couple years translate for them, because honestly, they don't deal with necessarily the big waves in tournaments like these Great Lakes, but they manage to stay composed, stay organized, and stay focused through it all. And so I'm excited for the future of it. And I think that we're embracing it more. It's very cool to see such an international sport. I mean, we had guys from Canada, Japan, the United States, even guys from Tennessee. That's basically a foreign country for most. And, and they were in the top 10 as well, you know. So
No doubt about it. And, you know, I wonder if these guys, has anybody ever asked them, do they hear from Takamori when they get a win? Because he was the first, really. I mean, when you think about it, he was the kind of the trendsetter for us, had such great success on the Bassmaster Tour back in the day. I wonder if he contacts these young guys and gives them an attaboy, you know, when they get a win.
I do wonder. They do have a close knit group in terms of you know, traveling. They don't necessarily, they're not soaked into the American environment of, you know, I guess households and who they hang out with daily. They have their groups, but I don't, you know, that's like saying, you know, somebody from California that pioneered fishing, that I would know them. You know, when I'm at church, everyone's always like, yeah, I know a pro. My uncle fished and they're not a pro. You know, like, so if you were saying, hey, this California guy, Do you know him? Growing up in Japan, you know, there's probably a smaller tournament circuit, but it's getting so big now that you could be in a different part of Japan and not really know other studs in the area, you know? So, I'm not sure if they run together in that aspect or communicate, but, I do know that there is I guess an admiration of like, when you see someone do it, you know, it's now possible. And, we really hadn't had that since Takahiro Omori. And now we've got Taku Ito,
yeah,
Kyoya Fujita and Kenta Kimura, obviously winning opens, and Masayuki Matsushita, same thing.
I would think that, I mean, they're all here, though. I think once they're here in that inner circle, you look for your countrymen. You know what I mean? I mean, I would think that maybe they didn't know each other back in the homeland, but I would think once they're here,
for sure,
you know, they might hang together and so on. Ronnie Moore with us here in the role, in the Rapala winner circle, joining us here for talking about Kyoya Fujita and his win, 86 pounds, 12 ounces. And so I'm looking now at the winning baits. So we finally got, yep, to see these baits and some of them, I mean, you know, look, a French fry on a, you know, on a drop shot, that's as common as anything is common. The spoon surprised me a little bit. I don't know how much I saw the spoon in action watching live, but what I'm really excited about was this Damiki style rig that he used with the Jackal Revoltage drift fry 5.2 rigged on this 2.0 hook and two auto hook on a quarter ounce. That is a unique looking thing. I mean, that's a different looking thing. Jackal, people know Jackal. We have that product that we buy that, but that is a very, very unique looking bait.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of that drift fry show up at Lake Murray. But everybody was distracted with the crab, you know, imitating, right, lure. And the crab didn't factor nearly as much, just like the spoon didn't factor. We saw him pick up the bait caster on day four at Champlain, didn't catch anything with it. That might have been a day one thing. That might have been, you know, practice thing. I know that that spoon comes out in September, and it is Kyoya's, you know, prototype signature series spoon that he's helped design that should be released. But there was some investigative journalism going on Bassmaster Live. I just want to say every afternoon, Mark Zona, Tommy Sanders, Such, and myself, we try to put our heads together. We tried to get some kind of intel on the baits. We did see some other fluke style baits that aren't sponsor baits of Kyoya, obviously. So you, just like an American, just like a professional fisherman, not going to give out any props to non-sponsor baits. But I think we can say that we dialed in that it was probably another bait being used was the Depths Sakamata Shad. And that's like a 5-inch or a 7-inch. I think there might be even, I'm not sure if there's a 9-inch, but it's a bait we've seen Kenta Kimura, Masayuki Matsushita, Carolina rigging, you know, for at Rayburn and things like that. But the smaller version does go well on a jig head for the Damiki style. And so seeing Kyoya, you know, put some different baits in play there was interesting as well. You always see the baits hanging on the end of the rods, but the one in his hand, you don't ever get to see. So we got a little bit of gallery love. We got a little bit of live love. We got to see a little bit of it. And I think we kind of found a color that the non-sponsor bait was. And when I looked it up, I was told by someone who gave me the hint of it that actually one of the names in Japanese is the Japanese word for smelt. So
it's
a bait that looks like forage that smallmouth would feast on. So Kyoya's dialed in for sure. And to see him have the two biggest bags on day one and day two, I mean, day two and day three, were a fantastic week for him. Kudos to him, four top sevens, finally getting a win. And hopefully this opens him up a little bit more to conversating with us, you know?
All right, we'll get a quick break in here. When we come back, the numbers. We got AOI on the line. We got ROI on the line. We got Classic on the line. It's all on the line at the St. Lawrence coming up this weekend, and we'll do that with Ronnie Moore next on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
Welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. We are visiting with Ronnie Moore from Bassmaster Live, and he is the one that has the calculator going, and he'll be helping us out all through this upcoming weekend as we will have the Minn Kota Bassmaster Elite at the St. Lawrence River. This one has a little different twist to it. The winner automatically qualifies for the Bassmaster Classic. We'll get into that a little bit more. We're coming off of a win for Koyo Fujita, and he has now pulled within 15 points of Joey Cifuentes for Rookie of the Year. Just talk about that for a minute, Ronnie, and what Joey is going to have to do here to hold off Fujita, who obviously is shown a great propensity in these smallmouth waters.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, honestly, if we're comparing resumes, Joey, we should almost flip the question and say, like, what does Kyoya have to do to beat Joey? Joey's got a first and an 11th on this Northern Swing, and Kyoya's got a first and a 7th. So They've basically been neck and neck since we left the Sabine River. Joey Cifuentes has top 20 finishes at the St. Lawrence River as well. Some of them just river exclusive. I don't know how much lake experience he has, but he does have tangible experience there. Hey, I pointed it out on Bassmaster Live, Kyoya Fujita's worst Bassmaster finish is a 111th place finish last month at the St. Lawrence River. That might have been his first time there, river exclusive, and fishing for smallmouth in current with forward-facing sonar is a whole lot more difficult than wide-open spaces floating around in a lake. Champlain does have current. It will move you around, but it's not like the swift 3 to 4 mile an hour current coming right at you sustained that a St. Lawrence River will have. So maybe the lake is made for Kyoya. Maybe the lake is made for Joey. But all I know is that day one, we're going to have a strong, strong south wind. And if we send them, it could really flip the Angler of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Classic Cut Line and Requalification. Those races all on their head, because people could make a huge jump if they do that risk, or it could just not work out. It's different than just fishing in the middle of the lake when you're fishing with 20-mile-an-hour winds, 30-mile-an-hour winds, the possibility of big 5 to 7 foot waves. That makes it a whole lot harder. So I think that's going to affect the races a bunch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so the Rookie of the Year is worth $10,000. The Angler of the Year is worth $100,000, and incredible prestige. And it's a couple of Southern boys at the top, Alabama's Kyle Welcher and South Carolina's Brandon Cobb, and they are separated by 6 points at the top here. Now, you can go back 30 points from the lead and find Drew Cook, but it would take it would take a complete collapse by both Welcher and Cobb and a great tournament, maybe a win by Cook, for him to win it. Do you feel like this is a two-man deal? I mean, this is two guys and that's it?
Not at all.
Really?
Because Drew Cook has gotten better and better on smallmouth. He just got a top 13 finish at Champlain. Drew Cook's been one of the best anglers since he's arrived on the Elite Series. And I really have ultimate confidence that he won't slip. Now, will he go get a top 10 or top 20 that he needs? Maybe, maybe not. But when you think about how the weights are at the St. Lawrence River, the fact that someone could have 20 pounds a day and missed a cut like they did last year, that could be a possible thing. Somebody catch 40 pounds for 2 days and miss the cut, that could be one of our guys. Brandon Cobb, Kyle Welcher could catch 40 pounds for 2 days and end up 56th place. And if that's the case, you've got anyone in the top six that can go pop off a top 10, and there you go. They don't even have to bomb, Tom. Like, they could go get a top 60 and have the top six all get in the top 20 or 30. That's very possible. These guys have proved it. When you have Shakir, Walter, Cifuentes all outside, you know, fourth, fifth, and sixth, when you have Cook 30 points behind, and honestly, those guys don't have to beat each other, but just by, you know, 1 pound, 1 pound is going to separate 10 spots, a dozen spots. So you think Joey's got to make up points on Walters. Walters has to make up a few points on Shakir. That can all be done by just ounces. Half a pound could be 6 spots, and these guys could really be 20th, 25th, 30th, and that could be what the deciding factor of AOI is. I 100% think that it's still a 6-person race, in
really?
My opinion.
Okay.
Just because of how good Shakir, Walters, and Cifuentes have been on this Northern Swing, that if Cobb stays and plays it safe in the river because of the wind, and that's where he's more comfortable in the river, he could catch less weight than the other guys and be behind the eight ball, or a welcher could go out in the lake, risk it all because this is his best style is out in the lake, and end up losing points because of how windy and the weather, you know, trying to adjust that factor. So there's two different things. You could play it too safe and lose a lot of points, or you could go risk it and not even make it back to weigh in time and lose points that way. So, or you could go out and win the tournament in the lake. I think that's a huge X factor, plus 2 days of practice. Patrick Walters is somebody, he doesn't care. He's going to go do something wild. If he thinks he can win, he's going to go do something wild. We saw him go way out in the lake last time and had a good finish. He could go way out in the lake once again, and he is one who could come back and bring a bag to the scales. And it, after day one or day two, it's a realistic 4 to 6 person race still.
All right, so take us through what happens if the winner is in the top 41 right now in points, and that's a double qualification. What does that mean? Does that push us down to 42? I think we're looking at 41 right now. 42 is Cody Huff right now. Is that how this will work if the winner comes out of the basically the top half of the field?
Yes. If the winner of the St. Lawrence River event is already classic qualified based on their AOI finish in the top 41, it will bump down to 42 for the Elite Series. And then, obviously, if Jeff Gustafson caught him good enough to rise up from the low 40s, like 47th or 48th, wherever he's at in points right there, if he rose up enough and got in the top 41, it would also double qualify and bump down again. So, at most, we will see the top 43 have it cleanly. The top 43, everyone 43 and up made the classic. Or it could be a broken system where we have 41 and up make the classic, Gussie somewhere in the 40s, but doesn't double qualify, he makes it, and then the winner's outside the top 41, and they punch their berth on their own. We haven't had that lately. Brian Schmidt last year moved up enough where a top five got him a classic berth, but he went ahead and won it and went from out of the classic to double qualified in 1 week. So that's a potential there as well, that if someone moves up from 52nd, 53rd, with a win, that they could double qualify after being out completely going into the last week of the season.
It's a fascinating to see the guys that made the move above the classic cut line at Champlain. I mean, this is cream rising to the top, guys getting done what they got to get done. Brandon Lester having a bad year. All of a sudden, he's above that cut line. Steve Kennedy, Corey Johnson, Mike Iaconelli, who was way up at the top early, had fallen way down. Clark Wendlandt, Hank Cherry is now in, a two-time classic winner. It really was fascinating to see these guys move up. Now they got to hang on to those spots.
Yeah, and the same thing could be said for the guys just outside the cut. I think Cody Huff is 42nd after a third place finish.
Seth Fider at 44.
Our three biggest losers of the Northern Swing have been Seth Fider, Mike Iaconelli, and Steve Kennedy. Those guys were all in, and then they all have fallen out. But on that day two at Champlain, Iaconelli and Kennedy were able to catch enough weight, even though they missed the cut severely. They were able to move up, you know, a dozen spots and get back in the classic. But boy, did we ever think that we would be rolling into the St. Lawrence River where Corey Johnston has to catch him to qualify for the classic? And it's not like past years where he had to catch him to maybe win Angler of the Year or to get in the top five of AOI. He has to catch them because 5 points below where he's at, that's out. That's not at Grand Lake next year, and that would be shocking to see. So, yeah, we've got some big names also that are, you know, jumping up there, and a guy like Jeff Gustafson's kind of had a middling Northern Swing as well. St. Clair wasn't great. Right. Champlain wasn't great. If he were to jump up, and I'll say this hypothetically, he could go from being qualified as the defending classic champ to jumping up and winning this event, and he could go triple qualified. He could win the event, move up in the classic cut, already be the champion, and have his berth from the win. He could get triple qualified. So there's a lot of crazy potential there, but I do love having some cameras in the boats with our AOI leaders, with some local guys that know how to win here, but and actually need a good performance this year to get back in the classic hunt for sure.
It's going
to
be great stuff, and Ronnie Moore will be on it as well, the rest of the Bassmaster Live crew as well. Ronnie, I appreciate you so much, and I can't wait. This weekend is going to be great, great stuff there at the St. Lawrence River going out of Clayton, which means, of course, the lake is big time in play. Ronnie, I appreciate you.
Of course, Tom. I'll put in a good word with Kioya for you to get on the show.
Yeah.
He'll do good, I promise, in the future.
Yeah, well, they'll come a time. They'll come a time. It's not today, but they'll come a time. All right, man. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Remember, if you missed any of this week's show, it's just a click away at bassmaster.com/radio, or just visit bassmaster.com and click on the anglers page and you'll see Bassmaster Radio listing there. Finally, you can visit the Sports Map Radio podcast page at sportsmapradio.com/podcast. So until next time, keep those lines tight and nets heavy. I'm Tom Abraham, and this has been Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.